My name is Lori Lively. I'm on the 522 Steering Committee, and we have a really fantastic panel for you today. Let me just introduce, to my right here is Alexis Baden-Mayer. Many of you know her from Organic Consumers Association. She's right at the top of that organization, has done amazing legal work for them. Steve Hallstrom is not on your program. He is co-owner with his wife of Lettuce Farms in Oakville, Washington. He's also on the 522 Steering Committee and has provided some really valuable assistance to us. He'll have some things to say, Steve. And next to Steve is Trudy Bialik. She is Public Affairs Director at PCC National Natural Markets and co-chair of the 522 campaign. Don't worry, we have some other representatives from other groups as well. John Rulak is founder of Nutiva Hemp Products, many of you know. And John has to leave, so we're going to open with him in a few minutes. Marnie Reynolds is with the GMO-free San Juans. She did an amazing action there. We'll hear from Marnie. To her right is Dave Murphy, founder of Food Democracy Now, another amazing advocacy organization. And on the end, we have Chris Hardy, who did a similar action for GMO-free Jackson County in Oregon. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
First off, I wanted to say thanks to Miguel from the Biosafety Alliance for organizing this. Let's give him a round of applause for all the work he did. Miguel has really been a tireless worker and an advocate for a non-GMO world based in the Bay Area, and has done a lot of great work, so I really appreciate it. This is not such an easy event to pull off, so it's great to do that. So my name is John Rulak. I'm the founder and CEO of Nutiva. We're an organic food brand based in Northern California, and this is kind of my day job, but I'm also co-founder of GMO Inside, which we'll talk a little about. So this last summer, during Prop 37, which Nutiva was involved in and myself, I was concerned that we might not win the vote because of all the money that came into the campaign. So we really looked at, you know, what could we do after the election in November to put more pressure on brands so we can go to a non-GMO world. So we came up with this idea of GMO Inside, kind of a take on Intel Inside. There's like Intel chip in all the computers. Well, a lot of people are now starting to realize there's this thing called GMOs, but they don't know what products they're in. So in a way, you can also think about GMO Inside as the non-GMO project is like the carrot. The non-GMO project works with different brands, some organic brands, and they also work with some mainstream brands that are not organic to label products. So they kind of work with everyone. And we kind of look like they're the carrot, and GMO Inside, we're the stick. We'll show you some examples of what we're working with some of the different brands. And I also want to give a shout out to a couple of the people, Sherry and Zuri, that are on our team, and they were part of the Prop 37 campaign, social media and graphics. So we worked with them on this, and also Green America, which puts on the Green Festival. Some of you might have been to some of those. The idea is don't be a lab rat. So our focus is to pick some of the largest food brands in the world that are part of Monsanto's supply chain. So there's one thing that we can do is obviously vote at the ballot and win 522, or in other things, but what products are we buying every day, or what products are our friends, or our family, our community, or our region are buying? And it's basically coming down to, as long as you're buying products that are part of the Monsanto supply chain and Monsanto economic activity, is Monsanto gonna have a business? They will. And if you stop buying, if we stop buying those products, what's going to happen? Their sales are going to start dropping. So what we've identified is we want to pick the most successful food brands and basically tag them through social media. So Chobani is the first, we just started this 2 weeks ago. We've put 3,000 comments on their Facebook wall. 3,000 in 2 weeks. So what do you think of that? And There's also a lot of other organizations. There's like different sites that are posting. Food Democracy Now just posted something. Organic Consumers Association. There's another food blogger called the Food Babe that's activist. And so each one of those are getting lots of comments and shares. And we're seeing a lot of people saying, I'm never going to buy it again. And these factory farm cows are fed a diet of GMO corn, soy, and alfalfa, and even cottonseed. How many people know that cottonseed, you're allowed to use toxic pesticides that are not allowed in food crops? Does people know that? And yet the number one yield off of a cotton crop is seed, not fiber. So we really wanted to educate these people. And the idea is Chobani says it's natural. So Chobani uses milk from cows fed GMOs. How natural is that? Not very natural. So we've come up with some fun graphics. If GMOs are fed to cows, then this must be some scary dairy. Yeah, and the idea is that they did $600 million last year. They spent $52 million in advertising. $52 million. And so part of the message is, could you spend that money to actually source milk from your farmers and suppliers that are non-GMO? Now, part of the challenge is, can you buy a lot of non-GMO grains in America today? It's hard to get. So if we can put the pressure in the marketplace in the next 6 to 9 months, then what's going to happen come April 2014? They're going to plan a lot more. And already we're seeing, like Cargill, they used to have, I was told some farmers recently, they had like an elevator to buy non-GMO grain, but it was like not open very much. It was hard to get to. Now, even Cargill's realizing there's money to be made in GMO. They trade organic, they trade non-organic, mostly non-organic GMO, but even a company like that's starting to do that. So we can put the pressure in the marketplace. So we also show, we're not only just the stick, we're also showing, here are some options. If you buy yogurt, we're showing here some good examples. There's Stonyfield, there's Strauss, Nancy's from Oregon, and then there's another Wallaby organic Greek yogurt. So we also show what some of the solutions are. We have over 73,000 Facebook fans, and so I'd really encourage all of you, if you want to change the food system, you want to create a non-GMO world, you know, work with us if you're on Facebook. We also have a petition to the CEO of Chobani, and we're really working on some of those things. So it's really important to educate more people. So the first campaign that GMO Inside did in November was the Cheerios. So I thought it was kind of interesting. You can see on the right there, that's actually off a cereal box. It says, share what Cheerios means to you. So what others are saying at Facebook.com Cheerios. We thought that was perfect, right? They're asking for us to share. So we said, tell Cheerios, what do you think about GMOs in your cereal? Share, and then someone said sharing is caring, right? So if you care about these things, you want to share these with the brands. They may not necessarily like hearing that, but if they're asking for it, we'll give them some feedback. We've put 20,000 Facebook comments against GMOs on Cheerios' Facebook wall. Do you think their CEOs heard about that? What about their director of public relations? So right now, Cheerios has to make a choice. They're going to be branded, tagged essentially through social media, that Cheerios equals Monsanto equals herbicide spraying equals viruses, or bacteria, all of it right into their product, right into the babies that you're feeding to your family. So is that good publicity for Cheerios? Not too good. So they have a choice. They can go non-GMO, and then what's that going to do to the marketplace? That's going to be a big change. So we're really focusing. We actually even haven't launched our official campaign with Cheerios. We've already gotten 20,000 comments. So we're planning a much larger campaign this fall. And so part of it, though, is each one of you in your networks, all of you probably know 10 or 20 people, right, that want a non-GMO world. Well, if we can get all of you helping with us, that's going to make a difference. So this was, we also, like Dr. Mercola, how many people know about Dr. Mercola? He's a great advocate for all the non-GMO and organic. Here he did a whole thing. General Mills gets a backlash after it because it spent $1.1 million to defeat the GMO labeling campaign in in California. So we really wanted to remind people of that. And then the other interesting thing was, you see this thing over here on the right, Deception? They created, ironically, I figured, like, how do they make up this stuff? They actually put out a Facebook contest where they gave the logo of and the lettering of Cheerios to their Facebook fans. I had no idea this was going on. They did that 3 days before we launched our first post with Cheerios. So we had hundreds of people, Deception and GMO Cheerios, et cetera, using their logo, and they had to shut the contest down, and we got a lot of publicity all over. So, you know, you know, I'll take that good luck, you know. Next slide. So Cheerios, a spoonful of GMOs. Yeah. Next one. Here, say Cheerio to GMOs. So General Mills says they deliver what their customers want. So in Europe, they don't use GMOs. Tell them that we don't want them either here. So that's one of the things. In Europe, Cheerios have no GMOs, but they do here. And so people are really, you know, really wondering about that whole thing. And our goal is, if we can be successful with two of the biggest food brands in the world, Cheerios and Chobani, and they go non-GMO, and that's our goal in the next year. A lot of other brands are going to start thinking about that, you know. Maybe all we need to do is just call up and have a conversation with them. We don't need to launch any campaign and just say they potentially could be on the next list, and they better get with the program. So that would be much easier than to have to spend all this time here, right? Thanks. The other thing is, especially around the Chobani campaign, the number one use of GMOs today is for crops for feed, whether it's for meat or milk, animal feed. That's what mostly soy is. I think like over 95% of all the GMO soy is going for animal feed. So if we can take, and Chobani's buying 40 million pounds of milk a day, 40 million pounds. Imagine if that could shift over to non-GMO. That would be a big, you know, ultimately we want to see it organic. But if we can create a market for organic is the best, non-GMO conventional is the middle, and then GMO conventional is the bottom of the barrel. And create these, right now, it's pretty much either organic or GMO. So we want to create this middle supply chain, this middle market demand to encourage people. You know, eventually, we want to get the non-GMO, non-organic to go towards organic. You know, but maybe it's going to be a stage. But this milk and meat thing is really important. Really need to, you know, same way with chicken. How many people are hearing these chicken companies say it's natural chicken? You know, Zaki Farms or Foster Farms, there's all these ones in the West Coast. And they're using GMO grains. How natural is that? Not very. So the idea is we don't want to be a lab rat. And this is a quote from one of the people in the campaign. People are unaware that the majority of processed foods on the shelf have genetically engineered ingredients in them. So we want to inform people about that. So I want to encourage people to, you can go to gmoinside.org or go to our Facebook page. And then one other thing is I just wanted to give a shout out to the people who have been funding 522. The biggest funder to date right now is Dr. Bronner's. They put in $750,000 in the campaign. Yeah, actually, and I hear they might put in another $250,000. So, and maybe even more. We will see. And PCC Markets has put in, I understand, $250,000 as well. And there's also a brokerage company called Presence Marketing around the United States. They've put in, I think, $300,000, and Nature's Path, a couple hundred thousand as well, close to that. Yeah. And Nativa, we put in not quite as much as that, but we put in $75,000, so we're doing our piece. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so is there any questions about this? I'll just take a couple so we can go on, but I might have to leave a little early. I have to get to the airport in a bit.
I just want to say that this is the kind of thing we need. I share this kind of stuff on my Facebook page and all the GMO Facebook pages that I'm aligned with over and over, all day long, and every day to all the people. This is the way you get the word out in a way that
Thanks. Right. Plus with good graphics. Our graphic person is amazing. Isn't Sherry amazing when she's doing all this stuff? You know, she's not here, but yeah. She's GMO West Hollywood. You can check her out on Facebook. Hers is way more radical than our stuff on her homepage. But okay. Yeah, well, this is, I understand there's a concern with that. This is an NGO. GMO Inside is an NGO. It's not a for-profit business. So they have a little more leeway in terms of those. And also, does Cheerios really want to get into a public lawsuit with a company that says there's GMOs in it when there are? Imagine the PR with that. So they have to be a little careful. You know, they could harass us with lawsuits, but then that's going to go... could kind of turn against them. Any other questions? Good. Well, I'm going to turn it over, I guess, to Dave from Food Democracy Now. This guy is a rock star doing great work getting the word out. And here you go, Dave.
Well, thank you, John. Listen, I appreciate, you know, John Rulak. I want to thank him right off the bat. He just pledged another $50,000 to 522 and Rowan, please clap your hands. You know, he just did that this week, and it's kind of fun to watch what he does with GMO Inside. And like you say, this is a, you know, at Food Democracy Now, I'll just say real quickly, my name is Dave Murphy. I'm the founder and executive of Food Democracy Now. We're a grassroots community of 680,000 farmers and citizens dedicated to reforming food, agriculture, and environmental policy. Doesn't sound really exciting, but you know, I just say I moved back to Iowa 7 years ago to stop a factory farm half a mile from my sister's farm. And all the rules in the laws in our state were written against basic local decision making. They had stolen local democracy from us in Iowa. I had expected to be back for 2 months to run a state senate campaign. The guy lost. And then we thought we'd get local control in Iowa and that local county officials could have a say in where factory farms are located in the state. That didn't happen. Industrial agriculture stepped in and stopped us in the state house. And so I had wanted to move back to Washington, D.C. and continue on with my life, but I am now involved in the food movement, kind of full on. And I'll just say, in Iowa, you know, I actually was a lobbyist for 6 months in the state capitol, something I tragically have to admit on my resume now, that I've been a lobbyist. But it got me a really good inside look at how our democracy really works. You think you're going to vote for an elected official. They say what they're going to do in the campaign, and they're going to go and vote for a bill to support cleaner water, cleaner air, stopping, you know, basically the loss of family farms across America. It's not how it works. You know, I got a full on education, basically how industrial agriculture lobbies work in our state capital and in the U.S. So Iowa, I come from Iowa. Usually I show a couple photos of what it looks like, what industrial agriculture in Iowa looks like. The first month I was back in Iowa, I showed, there was a, my mother and I went on a Sunday drive looking at factory farms, and there were 6 oil barrels full of dead baby pigs from a factory farm, from a farrowing unit. Now this is a church, I don't want to really show that photo, but I'm just going to say that is how industrial agriculture is run in Iowa. They don't care about the animal, just like they don't care about the farm, they don't care about the land. The other thing is the GMO issue. So in Iowa, 97% of soybeans are genetically engineered. 91% of corn in Iowa is genetically engineered. A couple people have asked me since I've been here, what's it like to have these conversations in Iowa? I said, I talk about these issues, whether it's factory farms or genetically engineered food, to anyone. You know, I have friends of mine that sell Monsanto seeds. This is how industrial agriculture is done there. But the good news is there's a flaw in the system. Just like we couldn't get my microphone to work, technology breaks down. And so farmers in the Midwest are having an experience where GMOs are causing some problems with fertility issues in the livestock, and they're causing crop diseases and the failure to yield and the superweeds. The interesting thing is this year there's a bumper crop of superweeds. And I like to go, and the other photo I show is factory farms and then superweeds. But you know, let's get it. Someone asked me, Alexis just asked me before that we started, she's like, did you ever expect this movement to grow on GMOs and labeling in this conversation? You know, part of me did. In 2007, Obama was in Iowa, and he caucused there, and I was, because of working with farmers, I was able to convince his ag staffer to say that labeling of GMOs was a good idea. He did this at an event that I organized, and I had a camera there to get Obama on film, where he promised to label genetically engineered foods. He promised in front of an audience of, you know, he promised in front of an audience of 400 Iowa commodity corn farmers and soybean farmers who are on the sustainable agricultural side. But this is a group, Iowa Farmers Union. Even those farmers that plant GMOs in this group, they still believe one thing. We have a democratic right to know what's in our food. And that's what this is all about. The interesting thing is I was able to kind of convince them, because Jeffrey Smith is in Iowa, and the Fairfield is a very progressive community. And so, you know, we convinced them that it was a reasonable and common sense thing to do. So in Iowa, 2007, we got Obama on film. And we knew at that point that it was an important moment that we would be able to have this conversation with the American public, that why labeling is important, why these companies, these corporations have stolen our basic democratic rights. So the real conversation about the GMO labeling movement really got started in January 2011 when they approved GMO alfalfa. That really woke up a lot of people, a lot of people that never had any concern about it. The interesting thing was the organic community, especially the organic dairy industry, really got involved because they were threatened for the first time to have their main forage stock, alfalfa, contaminated. The great news is that woke up a lot of activists. Pam Larry in California and a lot of people, David Bronner, from Dr. Bronner, they got Prop 37 on the ballot. I'll have to say I was a co-chair of Prop 37. I was very involved in that campaign. I moved out to California for the last 4 months, and I thought we were going to win. We had a very good chance. A lot of people, we've had conversations about why California didn't win. I'll tell you one reason why we didn't win. There's probably two reasons, but the real biggest reason is they spent $46 million to run one of the most dishonest and deceptive campaigns to deceive California's voters about why they shouldn't support labeling. There's a lot of issues that matter of this technology of genetic engineering, and I know the flaws of this system very well. I interviewed Dr. Huber in 2011. I brought him to the USDA with fellow scientists and a farmer. In the summer of 2011, we explained to the top scientists at the USDA why there were problems with this technology. The fact is, you can't, you know, they said we need to have peer-reviewed science. We need to have peer-reviewed studies. We understand, really, the one thing is, not only is our democracy, our elected officials, bought and paid for, but our public universities, our scientists in the United States, they are living a lie, and they are living in silence, and they take these grants from these major corporations, and then they cherry pick the study to show that there's no problems, to show that there's no harm. The great news is we are living in a new age. There are scientists around the world that are doing these studies. Howard Vlieger is a farmer in Iowa that just published a study showing problems with glyphosate and Roundup having in GMOs negatively impacting the stomachs of hogs in the Midwest. This is a study I've known about since 2011, but you can't talk about something in the media until it's peer-reviewed. And then immediately, our opponents, Monsanto's lobbyists, just like they ran a smear campaign against Arpad Pusztai, ran a smear campaign last fall against Cirellini. The great news is we have created a front in Washington State. One more minute. We've created a battle where they can't escape. This conversation is no longer hidden. Newspapers and the media have not covered this conversation for 20 years in the United States. But when you have a political battle like Prop 37, that conversation is now public. It's an education campaign. Washington State, we're going to finish what we started in California here in Washington State. Absolutely. We really are. And I want to thank Trudy, I want to thank Lori and Steve, and I want to thank Senator Marilyn Chase. And I really want to thank you guys from the bottom of our hearts. A lot of people were very discouraged after California. They weren't sure what's going to happen. And this is what's allowing the fight to continue. What is, 30 more seconds. Remarkable things have happened with the GMO labeling movement since California lost. I'm sure most of you are aware of the fact that in 26 states, legislation was introduced to for bills to pass in a state legislature. No one thought we could win. Remarkably, in Connecticut, they passed a bill in May. 8 days later, they passed a bill in Maine. A few weeks before the Connecticut bill passed, the Vermont House passed the bill in the House. In January, they're going to sign it into law. This week, New York State, they had a hearing on labeling of genetically engineered foods. The fact is, this is a conversation that Monsanto has been, and the biotech industry has been terrified of for 20 years. And we have to win this. One last thing I have to say. Having faced a barrage of negative ads for $1 million a day that they ran in California, unfortunately, in our democracy, it's for sale. And we need you and your friends and your family and everyone to raise a little bit of money to give to 522. We cannot afford to lose this battle. This is one of the most critical battles that we have in our democratic, in our democracy, to win our rights. And I know Alexis is going to talk about something about this international trade agreement. Never doubt that they are working behind the scenes to steal our rights. But if we all stand up together, we can win this one. All we need is 51% on election day. So I'm counting on you guys to win this for us. Thank you.
Well, first of all, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to give you any legal advice at all. For those of us who live in the state of Washington, we have one of the most progressive systems in the country. And the only word I'd say if you want to start an initiative of some kind is go to your state agencies, the Public Disclosure Commission and the Secretary of State. They have wonderful tutorials and information about the process. It's not difficult. It's like a couple hundred pages to read and understand, but it really helps you in the process. So then getting down to the initiative and money, I remember once sitting in Lori's living room with six, there were six of us there, about a year ago, right? And we were contemplating the situation that things weren't going too well. Couple who were had filed the initiative said they were broke and they didn't have any money, and we were had a long debate about what to do. And I said, well, I don't know if we don't have any money if we're going to be able to succeed, but here's a check for $200. Keep the website up. And I left, and the next thing I know, this lady next to me is making a phone call saying, well, PCC has just decided to throw in some money, and it's, you know, from there we've gone forward. So a little bit of money helps. It doesn't take a lot. Everything you can contribute would be very much used and will be successful. How we got into this process, went to legislative hearings. There was some legislation introduced by Senator Chase that was drafted by on some stuff from some wheat farmers who wanted to prevent GMO wheat from coming into the state. They were worried about their market. They knew that Japan and South Korea and other countries didn't accept GMO wheat. And that legislation was fairly well written. It was somewhat similar to the California legislation. And when we went to the hearings, it was obvious to anyone who was watching that those legislators were not at all interested in this legislation. And so a couple of us got together in the hall afterwards and said, the legislators aren't going to act. We need to go to the people. And in this state, we have the initiative and process, and we decided to go ahead. But it wasn't quite that simple because, as one of these things said, one of these presentations just gave, there were a lot of no's. We had a lot of phone call conferences. People kept saying, no, you can't do it. You can't do it because the legislators are going to be upset. You can't do it because it's the wrong time. You can't do it because you don't have $500,000 to start with. Well, we only had a few thousand dollars to start with. But we did it. And we did it through perseverance and through reliance on the people, the organizations, the co-ops in the state, the other groups in the state who are willing to go out and work to raise the signatures. So the initiative process, I think, is a wonderful process, and we're here because of the dedication of the people. It's the people that make this process work, and it's the people who are going to win this in I-522 in the state of Washington.
My name is Trudy Bialik, and I've been working with Lori Lively and Steve Hallstrom and, I don't know, so many people over the last 20 years, really, on genetic engineering. I wanted to bring this conversation back a little bit to the social justice issue. I wanted to remind all of us in this room that labeling really is a social justice issue. It is not about having an organic option for rich white people to be able to go purchase. This labeling initiative is about making the choice available to every Washingtonian, rich and poor, rural and urban, everybody. This is not and should not be a class issue, and not having labeling is a class issue. I also wanted to say something about something that Dave had mentioned earlier. There was an article in the Spokane Spokesman Review not long ago, I think it was a week ago, that I just can't let go of. It was featuring a farmer in the state of Washington who's growing genetically engineered corn. And it had a picture of him, and it had several quotes from him. And he was saying, yeah, I'm growing GMO corn, but I wouldn't eat it, and I do believe it should be labeled. And I found that to be so interesting that it encapsulates the situation of where we are. Farmers, I do come from a rural area. Farmers will grow whatever the market demands, and farmers want to have a successful crop. If the market demand is for non-GMO, they'll grow that. If the market demand will let them get away with growing GE, they will grow that. And again, this is not about prohibiting. There's no rejection. No threshold for rejection, there's no testing required. This is a process-based system, very similar to the organic labeling laws that we have right now. As a retailer, we've been in this probably for 20 years now since RBGH came into the dairy industry in 1994. So this has been something that shoppers have been asking for 20 years. I just don't see that this is, once you learn about this, you can't stuff it back in. You can't unlearn it. So people who are coming from Albertsons and Fred Meyer's and QFC and looking for organic foods or looking for non-GMO foods, that market keeps growing and growing. We know that's not changing. It's those people who really, I think, will benefit the most, as well as the lower economic levels. They need to have the choice in conventional foods that they see in their grocery stores in Yakima and Walla Walla, the everyday foods in a conventional grocery store. Not just organic foods. I'm an organic shopper, but that should not be just for well-off white people. I really feel strongly about this. I have one last thing I want to say. When people ask, why is this really necessary? If we do not declare our rights, we lose them. We surrender them. We give them up if we don't declare them as something that we have an inherent right to. If we don't say we have the right to know what's in our food, we will be ceding that for a long time to come. And it's not just the genetically engineered salmon that's in the pipeline. I understand there are as many as 35 other animals in the genetic engineering pipeline. Food crops are one thing. Animals, especially with the salmon here in Washington State, I think that's a very powerful element in our campaign. We're available, Lori, Steve, myself, Dave, we're all on the steering committee. Go to Yes on 522 if you want to call us. You're welcome to call us. We'd be happy to answer any questions, not just at this conference, but at any time.
Hi, all. I'm Chris Hardy with GMO Free Jackson County, located down in southern Oregon. Down in the Rogue Valley, Jackson County, southern Oregon is known for lots of amazing, small, organic, diverse farms. We're very quite different from agriculture in the rest of the state. You know, biggest farm, I believe, is Stallbush Farms, and they're a certified organic farm, incidentally. About 500 acres that's being produced in the Rogue Valley at this point. The average size of a farm in the Rogue Valley might be closer to maybe 50 acres at the most. But we have hundreds of organic farms growing all across the Rogue Valley. Many farmers markets, every little town has at least one farmer's market, maybe two. Lots of community gardens, seed exchanges, lots of really awesome things going on in the Rogue Valley with seeds. It was February of 2012 when our farm, Village Farm, was looking for a piece of land, specifically in the city limits of Ashland, where we're home based, and looked to lease a piece of land. And we had a friend of a friend who said, you should contact someone, my buddy here has a piece of land. And so our farm was about ready to sign on for a lease. And then I asked to see the rest of the piece of land over a few days in discussion here, and come to find out he was leasing this other piece of his land on the other side of the property to Syngenta Corporation, who he said was growing GMO sugar beets. Just kind of said it as a little matter of aside. And so we were pretty shocked to find that out, because I'm managing the Ashland High School garden in Ashland and working with the Rogue Valley Farm to School program. We're saving seeds in our gardens as a part of the education that gets youth engaged in getting closer to their food. And so it was a big time shock, because this plot is right directly maybe 100 feet behind the Ashland Middle School, the John Muir Elementary School, and the Walker Elementary School. So all of these things were a bit of a shock. And if we could go to the next slide here, this kind of led us to do a little bit of exploration and understanding what the bigger picture was, connecting with Syngenta, the farm manager for Southern Oregon, who would not tell us where his GMO plots were, where Syngenta Corporation's GMO sugar beet plots were. And we dug a little bit deeper, and lo and behold, Syngenta Corporation is banned to grow GMO crops in Switzerland, where they're home-based. And here they are in our Rogue Valley growing these GMOs. So we had to do a little recon mission, if you will, over many weeks and many months, and it continues. Where are the GMOs? And so we have been working on this map for some time. This is a small portion of the Rogue Valley, indicative of much of how the Rogue Valley is laid out. Virtually those circles right there are 4 mile, 8 mile diameter, 4 mile radius. And when the sugar beet was regulated at the time of this discovery, the sugar beets were planted just like you see them here. The green dots, on the other hand, are organic, are seed saver, and are certified naturally grown and non-GMO farms. So as you can see here, that pretty much makes things quite crazy and difficult, if not impossible, because many of those dots of the GMO plots are actually touching the organic farms. So basically, that valley right there is the Bear Creek Valley, one small portion of the Rogue Valley. From basically that whole swath of circles that comes down from top left to lower right is the peaks of the ridge are on both sides. So you're looking at class 4, class 3, class 2 soils. Your best soils are right down where that whole lineup of dots are. So no one would really ever be growing up outside of the line there, virtually. So that just makes it almost impossible to keep your GMO pollen out of your organic pollen and all this stuff. And so we set about putting together a citizens initiative, which we collected almost 7,000 legitimate signatures to put it on the ballot. Since time, we've pulled together over 500 businesses, more than 150 farms in the Rogue Valley have signed on in support of a GMO-free Rogue Valley. Nonprofits. And we continue to work on our business outreach and put events together to bring Pam Larry to town, Jeffrey Smith, Alexis from OCA, many awesome visits and support continuing from Food Democracy Now! And OCA and George Kimbrell Center for Food Safety. George, we're so grateful for all the work that all of you guys have contributed to help keep things moving forward for Jackson County. Vitally, vitally important that we're all working together on this effort. And lastly here, I just wanted to share that social media, I concur with John that social media is like the way forward. It is getting you-know-what done, folks. We if you go to the next slide there, please. This you can't see very well, but that's our Facebook page, GMO Free Jackson County. At the time of the May 25th March Against Monsanto, who in here has heard of the March Against Monsanto? Yeah. So May 25th, we had over 2 million people marching in over 400 countries across, 400 cities across the world in 400 plus cities in over 50 countries. And that map right there is to show that we have nearly 3 million people viewed our Facebook material at that week. So social media is going to get it done, and we are not in this alone, and it is the movement from the roots up. So we are so grateful that to have all the support, and looking forward to supporting the I-522 initiative and lending all the support, because we know in May 2014, Jackson County's time will come for voters there to make the decision to ban or not the GMOs. Thank you.
My name is Marnie Reynolds, and I'm here on behalf of GMO Free San Juan County. We elected to have a GMO Free growing region last November's ballot. So we are now voter approved, and we don't allow the growing of GMOs in our county. I live on a very small island, and I don't know if any of you folks are familiar with the San Juans, but we are a group of islands. We have a natural barrier from the mainland, and that's water. And so it was one of the elements that we took advantage of when we started this campaign. I met a farmer, his name is Ken Acopiance, and Ken got a group of us together, and he was inspired by a man who visited Lopez Island. His name is Percy Schmeiser. And I wonder if anybody knows Percy Schmeiser. He's been around a while. Ken was quite enamored with Percy. He got a group, and so Ken got us together, and we formed this group, GMO Free San Juans. We went out and educated the public. We got a website together. We didn't have a Facebook page, however, but we did get a website. I was the secretary treasurer of the group, and if I can work with the PDC, anybody can, because I did, and I read that booklet from front to back, and we complied with everything they wanted. But it took a village to understand the parameters of what the GMOs are doing to our country, what they're doing to our soil, what they're doing to our farmers, what they're doing to our economy. And it was basically educating people in our county that really was, as I'll coin the phrase from I learned from Jeffrey Smith, the tipping point. So we did get 61% of the vote in November, and we are now able to claim that we are this GMO-free growing region. This, what it does is it allows our farmers to grow and maintain pure and natural seed, produce, and livestock feed uncontaminated by GMOs. It protects us from corporate supply or corporate control of our food supply, and it allows us to grow and raise what we want. And that does not exclude hybrid plants, because we are able to do that. It also allows us to continue buying whatever the stores have for sale, so it doesn't limit that. I'm here today to network with people and to spread the word that this is a possible thing. And if we can start on a small scale, like such as what we did on San Juan County, anyone can do it. And it basically, it takes a village, and that village is out there, and it's waiting for each and every one of us to go out and congregate and spread the good word. Thank you so much.
Hello. All right. Well, this has been so inspiring, and it makes me just remind myself how much I love democracy. Do you all love democracy and seeing democracy work? Well, Monsanto hates democracy. Monsanto hates democracy because democracy does not work for Monsanto. 9 out of 10 of us want to know where Monsanto has been hiding its GMOs in our food. And most of us wouldn't eat those GMOs if we knew where they were. If everything in this country were decided democratically, most of the food we eat would be non-GMO and Monsanto would be driven out of business. We don't have a problem convincing people we're right. We have a problem with our democracy when we can't get the politicians to pass the laws that the majority of us want. But no government, no matter how corrupted by corporate money, will be able to stop us when we get the 9 out of 10 people who agree with us to take action with us. And that's what's starting to happen. Monsanto knows that democracy doesn't work for them, so they're not taking any chances with it. They'll fight us at the local and state level when they have to. But when they get a chance, they're going to take us to a place far away from the voters, where it's hard to hear their voices, and where money talks very loudly. Congress. This is what they did when the Center for Food Safety's lawsuits started having an effect. Monsanto got their main man in Congress, Senator Roy Blunt, to slip the Monsanto Protection Act into a spending bill that Congress had to pass in order to avoid a government shutdown. It was stuck in the bill at the last minute, and it didn't get a vote, but it became law. We're seeing the same thing happen now with the King Amendment. Representative Steve King from Iowa got the House to include an amendment in the Farm Bill that says no state can put any condition on the manufacture or production of any agricultural product in interstate commerce. The debate on the King Amendment has focused on Proposition 2, a ballot initiative passed by the voters of California that says farm animals should have enough room to spread their limbs and turn around. That's why we call King's amendment the Animal Cruelty Protection Act. But I was told by Hill staffers that Representative King actually came up with this idea because of state laws regulating ethanol. The law is so broadly written that it could apply to anything: animal welfare laws, ethanol regulations, and certainly the laws that we're passing to regulate GMOs. Another group that hates democracy is the Grocery Manufacturers Association. They're working with Monsanto to fight I-522, but we know from news reports that they're also in D.C., trying to take care of the democracy problem they're having with states trying to pass laws to label GMOs. They probably like what they see in the King Amendment, but the Farm Bill might not pass. So they're working behind the scenes now to see what can be done in September, when Congress is back scrambling to avoid a government shutdown again, before their current spending bill expires on September 30th. What's amazing to me is that as corrupted as Congress is by corporate money, it is way too democratic for Monsanto and the Grocery Manufacturers Association. They'll fight us in Congress when they have to, but they'd rather be somewhere we can't get to, where voters are obsolete, where the corporations have full and exclusive access, where everything is kept secret from the public, international trade agreements. The Obama administration is currently negotiating two huge new trade deals, one with Europe and one with countries around the Pacific, including Japan and Peru. The US position is that bans on GMOs, but also pre-market safety testing and labels, are barriers to trade. The person who's negotiating this for Obama is Islam Siddiqui, who used to be the vice president and chief lobbyist for CropLife America. That's Monsanto, DuPont, Dow, Syngenta, Bayer, and BASF. That's the group that sent a mean letter to Michelle Obama when she planted her pesticide-free and GMO-free organic garden. It's true. Siddiqui is a political operator. He got his job with Obama by fundraising for Obama. Before working as a lobbyist for Monsanto and the rest, he worked for Clinton trying to get GMOs, sewage sludge, and irradiation into organic. Our movement stopped Siddiqui then, and we can stop Siddiqui now. We can stop the Monsanto Protection Act. We can stop the Animal Cruelty Protection Act. We can stop Congress's attempts to take away states' rights to regulate food and farming. We can stop Senator Roy Blunt. We can stop Representative Steve King. We can stop the Grocery Manufacturers Association, Monsanto, Dow, DuPont, Syngenta, Bayer, and BASF. We can do it if we get the 9 out of 10 people who agree with us to take action with us. And by moving the fight away from Congress and the international trade deals, where corporate money is louder than voters, and back to the state and local level, where democracy can work for us. GMO-free San Juans made democracy work last year. We're going to see democracy work here in Washington in November when we pass I-522, and we're going to see democracy work in Oregon when GMO-free Jackson County passes its ballot initiative in May 2014.
So this is a message for Chris. What has happened to all the Syngenta red dots on that map? And is that where the sugar beets were pulled up mysteriously one night in a kind of rogue removal?
So the Syngenta dots are still there. They've been there, have been there for years, even through the time of regulation under USDA APHIS. They were there, have been there. They didn't let anybody know that they were growing them there. And then come July of 2012, of last year, they got fully deregulated under the USDA APHIS. So now, it's just kind of getting swept under the rug. And it's so anyhow, that's where our initiative comes in. You know, we're just like, whatever craziness that USDA is up to, we just got to ban this stuff. And that's where we're at.
But where's the field where the sugar beets were? I shared it on my Facebook page. It happened someplace in Oregon.
Yeah,
somebody
first
went
off,
in at night.
For those who think that 40 tons of sugar beets were burned up in smoke, that didn't happen. You may have seen that, those who are on social media. And, so anyhow, it was 6,500 sugar beet plants. It was in Ashland, right virtually on the city limit border. Two fields. And over like one night, and then three nights later, a second field was ripped up. And yeah, the FBI's in Southern Oregon investigating. Oh, the FBI's like said they will not let it rest until they find that. You know, that's their job, is to find who did it. Probably the guy said, "We're not going anywhere until we find out who did." I said, "Did you talk to Syngenta?" Said you couldn't leave that off the table.
Just want to congratulate San Juan, but for those who live in other Washington counties, you have to be chartered as a Washington county in order to have citizen-initiated ordinances put on the way San Juan did. And there are only 5 counties and I believe 10 cities that are chartered. So this is a very different thing that has to be done before what San Juan did could be done. King County is chartered, and that's why you're seeing all the ordinances here.
Quick question for Trudy. Our co-op, our food co-op in Port Townsend, is in the process of labeling the foods it sells for content, GMO content, and they're not going to be purchasing any new foods that they know have GMOs in them. I'm wondering if PCC is going to lead in that too, because it seems like if co-ops get on the board bandwagon like Whole Foods says it's going to do in, what, 2018 or something like that, we don't need the laws if the stores will just label the foods.
We already have pledged to label all genetically engineered foods by 2018. We've been using an affidavit process for years for seafood, for, oh God, Fair Labor chocolate, a whole number of products. We will be continuing it. We've already gone through our produce department. We know that's clear. We know what's what in meat and dairy, and we probably will go there too. But we have pledged to label everything that is genetically engineered by 2018, along with the other retailers. And I think it's pretty realistic that we could probably meet that earlier.
Was there any organized opposition to that initiative that you had?
We had organized opposition. The Farm Bureau sent out two mailers when the ballots were mailed to the residents of San Juan County. They sent out two mailers, one of which actually was false.
The information that they gave on the mailer was completely false. We did not rally against that because it was so ludicrous that the voters knew, because of our grassroots education, that it was completely invalid.
And then Chris Hardy, I just have one question for you. I don't want to take up your time, but all those dots where you found the test plots, we know that those permits, when they're granted by the USDA, how do you actually find those? You're actually searching these areas out and scouting them down and finding those?
So what Gary Brown at USDA APHIS told us is that we would have to file a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, to get that information. It would take a number of months, and he said maybe it's just a waste of time because chances are they're just going to dereg it in the next couple months. And I think that was like in May of 2012. And sure enough, it passed. Like they just totally deregulated that crop.
Thank you, everybody.